Jacoby Ellsbury has ruined just about a fantasy season for everybody.
Episode 132 of Flags Fly Forever, a baseball prospectus fantasy podcast. I'm your host, George Bissell of Baseball Prospectus, and I'm joined once again by BP's managing editor, Brett Sayer, and Mike Gianella of the BP fantasy team. Gentlemen, I hope you enjoyed your week off, and I gotta say, it's been a tough week for James Comey owners in dynasty leagues, right?
Yeah, I mean, you really should have traded him about 6 months ago. You should have seen this coming.
Classic sell high candidate. Mike, how you doing? Are the Mets still alive?
Yeah, they're alive for the wild card at least, and they're on a little run despite all of the turmoil. It helps when you're playing the Giants too, as they've been doing. The Giants look bad.
They got destroyed in Cincinnati the last couple of days. They've
been getting, well, they lost by a run last night, but tonight they're down 5-1, and it just seems like if you get three or more runs against the Giants, you're probably going to win.
Yeah, like even Cueto struggled against them, so for that.
Yeah, I don't think Brett and I want to talk about Cueto.
He's had a weird year.
Yeah.
A lot of guys have had weird years. Speaking of weird years, Mike, I hear you have a new column that's the word on the street at Baseball Prospectus. Why don't you tell everyone a little bit about that?
Well, so we decided that since I do a lot of fab updates with closers and Matt Collins does the closer report, we're just going to merge our columns and we're going to have a wonderful column here where Matt and I join forces and decide to like write together and he's moving to Philadelphia or the Philadelphia area as well, so. Matt, if you're listening and you haven't heard about this yet, you're going to be coming down this weekend. Brett's going to have a U-Haul up for you there in New England, and I hope you enjoy the ride.
Did U-Haul pay for that plug? Because if they didn't, I'm not happy about it.
U-Haul did pay for that plug, yes.
The second one will cost you. All right, so we've got a really great show for you tonight. We're going to talk expert fab with these guys. Brett Sayer, auto new expert right now. Brett, you're at the top of the standings now. I heard you talking about that earlier.
I am. It's very fun.
I'm in last, so I'm not having the fun that Brett is having. Although the injuries are finally abating, so I'm almost not in last.
Brett, did you hold a celebratory press conference to announce your May victory? No.
I finished my victory lap about an hour ago.
All right, that's good.
I'm a little tired. I don't get out much.
All right, so you can read all of us at baseballprospectus.com. I want to stress this really quickly because this is like a point of emphasis I've had over the last few days. If you enjoy the work that we do and the content that Baseball Prospectus, and there's a team of fantastic writers, our prospect team, the fantasy team, you name it. I love our coverage. And if you feel that way, feel free to subscribe. I mean, that's the best thing you can do to support us. And that means a lot. If you enjoy our content, please help support us, and you can do that by subscribing at Baseball Prospectus. You can follow us on Twitter. Brett is at Brett Sayer BP. Mike is at Mike Gianella, and I am at George Bissell, posting things about Billy Hamilton. Don't forget to subscribe, rate, and review us on iTunes or whatever app you listen to the podcast with. Those ratings and reviews go a long way to helping us, so we appreciate it. We're going to do some Twitter mailbag questions a little bit later. We're also going to talk about Mike Gianella's first edition of the valuations, the in-season valuations, which came out. So we'll touch on a lot of polarizing hitters and pitchers a little bit later on. But gentlemen, let's dive into the expert fab. You guys ready?
Oh, yeah.
Sure. So Mike, exciting bunch this week.
yeah, Mike, I guess we have to start out on labor mixed, and we have Justin Wilson, who was picked up for $13, and I'm assuming he would have gone for a lot more had the news broken over the weekend that he was officially going to be the Tigers' closer going forward. I guess what are your thoughts on Justin Wilson, and then thoughts on K-Rod and that situation in general?
Well, to be honest, Wilson's a pitcher who I'm a little bit surprised somebody didn't sneak for $2 or $3 earlier, like a couple weeks ago, just because this isn't a ringing endorsement of Justin Wilson. It's an indictment of Francisco Rodriguez. He just hasn't looked good. And, I pointed this out in the offseason when I wrote up the American League closers. He's one of those closers that nobody mentioned as a risk candidate, like a Sam Dyson or Houston Street, before Street got hurt and lost his job even before the season started. But K-Rod really was a risk candidate. The velocity was down, the strikeouts were down, and this year he just hasn't looked good at all. He's just looked like a scrub back at the bullpen reliever. And if his name was, John Smith and not Francisco Rodriguez, he would have held the job for more than a week. So, but my feeling there is that it's Wilson's job. I know some people are saying that, oh, Francisco Rodriguez gets his confidence back and, he pitches well for a couple weeks in a setup role, he'll close. I just don't see why the Tigers would bother doing that unless Wilson struggles and, they decide to flip-flop again. But Wilson should be fine in the role. I don't see him being a top-tier guy by any means, but he's the best reliever in a bad pen, so I don't see why they'd switch them at all. So that was a pretty good pickup, and there's not really much to say about that. He just is what he is.
Yeah, I mean, Brett, for those of us who've played Dynasty or Keeper, I mean, Francisco Rodriguez is a guy who we've kind of been down on for a few years now, not only because of the age, but because he was primarily a changeup first closer, and that's always a risky profile.
Well, I mean, it depends on your changeup, right? I mean, Trevor Hoffman was a closer with a changeup profile for until he was what, 40, 41?
True, but he made the Hall of Fame.
Yeah, no comment on that one. But
Not yet. I think he's about to make the Hall of Fame, it looks like.
Oh no, I Merrick Garland him.
Oh God.
He missed by like 2%, right? Or
Yeah,
1%.
he should, whatever it is, he should make it the next year or two.
Yeah, I mean, the thing with K-Rod, and we've seen this with we've seen I'll go into sort of two different points. One, he's in the last year of his contract with Detroit, so they may give him some low leverage work just to try to get him his confidence back. But if he's doing this same thing, don't be surprised if they release him. These are the kind of situations where teams shouldn't be afraid to cut bait on these guys if they're just not going to trust them in any sort of capacity. They have Joe Jimenez who they can bring back up from AAA. Their bullpen's actually been pretty good. Alex Wilson has been fine. Shane Green has been fine. They've, you know, they've these guys have, I think they all have ERAs either close to two or under two. But, they don't need K-Rod at this point. And if he's just going to keep giving up home runs, they just might not keep him around. That said, the biggest indicator of future saves is past saves, and there is there are always situations like Jonathan Papelbon where you have a guy who goes from being a closer to really being completely off the radar, but a lot of these guys end up getting opportunities somewhere else. So I mean, obviously, unless you're in a really deep league, K-Rod, if he's not turning it around in the next week or two, you can feel free to cut bait on him. But if you're in a deep league, I wouldn't. And he at least looks serviceable for the rest of the year, even if he doesn't get his job back. There is no guarantee that he will not find himself in a closing job again next year, because that's just how we operate. Managers like to recycle closers like we recycle plastic bottles.
Fernando Rodney's still closing, so yeah. I think he'll get another opportunity. But Mike, we've had this conversation a little bit, but the value of closers, to me, doesn't feel like they're great investments. They've always been risky investments, don't get me wrong, but it feels like even more in recent years, unless you're literally drafting Kenley Jansen or Aroldis Chapman. I mean, what are you getting from closers? It just seems like none of these guys are safe.
Well, here's my take on it based on what I see out in the industry. And based on NFBC and labor, closers in those formats, which are 15-team mixed, are overpriced, with the exception of the elite guys like Chapman and Jansen, as you point out. I mean, Mark Melancon and Zach Britton are both injuries. And I've seen people complain about that, but it's like, well, you know, anybody can get hurt. I it's difficult to kind of say closers are unreliable because of injury. But in leagues like Tout and Labor, and in Tout in particular, it goes the other way. It really feels that people all know that, so there's this race to the bottom not to pay for closers. And you get to a point where if you're taking a $5 or $6 stab on a closer – yeah, it might not work out, but that's true of almost any $5 or $6 player in an only league. So it depends on your format. I do agree that in mixed leagues, the people do pay too much for closers. And particularly, you know, I know last year, you know, Brett, you were down on like Sean Tolleson, for example, and you were dead on about that. And you seem to have pretty good instincts. Like, I know in labor, when we were partners for 3 years, I would kind of push for those mid-tier bottom guys. And you're always like, no, I'd rather just, like, get nobody or get one closer and just wait. And that instinct is a pretty good instinct.
Yeah, I don't want to linger on the subject forever, but it just felt to me like a lot of the guys who fantasy owners were excited about, you know, the Kelvin Herrera, Edwin Diaz, Ken Giles range of closers, a lot of those guys have either struggled or gotten hurt or really just not returned that draft day value. So, that'd be my
chance. That's where you get into the most trouble. And we see this over and over again. It's the guys that might be elite closers if you squint.
Yeah.
That's where fantasy owners get themselves in over their head. And, you know, it's the guys that are sort of in the guys without huge track records, the ones sort of in the, you know, 8 to 15 range. So they're top half closers, but only because the bottom is just really terrible. So, you know, there's a lot of risk there, and there's more risk than people realize. But yeah, that's the price influx there.
Speaking of a lot of risk, Marwin Gonzalez for $7. Mike, I'll throw it out to you. Marwin has, I think at one point he'd homered in like 5 straight games, something like that, last week. Marwin Gonzalez, I think he's banged up now, but he's a guy who's kind of taken some playing time away from that Alex Bregman and the Evan Gattis at first base DH role. What should we expect from Marwin Gonzalez going forward? Because he's always just kind of been a guy who hit for a little bit of power and didn't play enough to really matter in a mixed league.
Well, the power will drop, but the thing about Marwin is he's always hit. Like, he's been one of those players who, you know, when they put him in there, he's been fairly productive. And, you know, we saw this in the past with the Astros, with a guy like Luis Valbuena, you know, different skill set, obviously. But the Astros are very good at finding playing times for guys like this. And, you know, I dug a little bit into the numbers with Marwin for this article. And, you know, what I found, and I found this a little bit later on with Zach Cozart, who was also picked up in labor mix. Gonzalez has done that thing where he's really improved his pitch selection, and the contact rate is just a lot better. He's making contact on just about everything, unless it's like a pitch, you know, low and out of the zone. So, you know, when you see that, when you see a hitter who's more selective, you know, even if it's not a great hitter, good things tend to happen, and that's what we're seeing with Marwin. Now, obviously, he's not going to hit 40 home runs. You know, this isn't a fantasy renaissance. But if he hits another, you know, 15 home runs the rest of the way, you know, even in a part-time role, and some of this, George, I heard you talking with Ryan Bloomfield last week about this in terms of home runs and contextually what they mean compared to in the past, you know, it shouldn't be a surprise because, you know, 15 home runs the rest of the way added to what he's done, that's not as big a number as, you know, would have been, say, 5 years ago.
Yeah, I think, Brett, you've been kind of driving this bus a little while, but when you look at power production, like Adam Duvall is kind of the quintessential example of this, that, you know, what does 30 home runs and a 260 average really mean at this point? So what's your take on a guy like Gonzalez, who's maybe a power-only type of source?
Yeah, I mean, I think Mike kind of hit it on the head. You know, Luis Valbuena is a great example of sort of what they do with these guys. They, you know, they find them playing time. These are guys that can hit enough to, you know, to be in the lineup most days. You know, they're not stars, and they're not people you necessarily want to carry on shallow fantasy teams. But yeah, I really, you know, for all of the talk of the logjam for at bats in Houston, we were talking about at the beginning of the year, you know, they seem to be doing a pretty good job of getting everybody in the lineup. So, you know, I know there was concern with Evan Gattis coming into the year, and he's gotten at bats. There's concern with Brian McCann, he's gotten at bats. You know, Bregman, all these guys, Josh Reddick, everyone's playing, and you know, it's Houston. Everyone's doing pretty well too. But yeah, I don't think, you know, if he finished the season with 22 to 25 home runs, I wouldn't be shocked. I'd still take the under, just because I think he's gonna cool off, and when he does, I think there'll be less reason to give him playing time because the Astros are so loaded on offense. But, you know, with what he's done, you know, there's definitely a role for him in deeper mixed leagues.
Yeah, that Astros offense is insane. So they, as we record this, they just lit up Bartolo Colon for 5 runs in the first inning. So, yeah, they're pretty good. Brett, let's talk about a guy that you picked up, and that was AJ Griffin. He had a 4-hit shutout today. I mean, you put an asterisk next to it because it was the Padres, and they had like a 10-0 lead off Jared Weaver after like half an inning. So what do you think about AJ Griffin? Because he strikes me as this sort of vanilla righty who doesn't throw hard, but in the right matchup, he definitely has value.
Yeah, I mean, I liked Griffin pre-Tommy John, you know, and, you know, that's just kind of who he is. I mean, he doesn't have great stuff. He, you know, generally has a pretty good idea of where it's going, and he can, you know, and he can keep his team in games, get some wins, and get some strikeouts. You know, it was a $3 bid. And it's a really good matchup week. So this is probably not someone who's going to be on my roster all season. But that said, I mean, as Mike referenced in the article on BP, you know, my pitching staff is kind of in shambles right now. I lost 2 more starters last week to the DL, and I need all the help I can get. So it'll be a very, very steep uphill climb to get back to respectability there. But today was a nice start.
Griffin's got a great curveball, and he gets the Athletics at home later on in the week. So that'll be nice. Mike, who else do you want to talk about on the rest of the mixed league pickups here? Because there's a lot of names, but no one really stands out to me. We were talking a little bit about that off air, that this is just kind of a boring list. Like, ugh.
Well, there's two guys. I alluded to Cozart a little bit, and I do believe that, you know, the average will obviously drop, but, you know, Cozart, like Marwin Gonzalez, and I think it was Mark Sheldon, and I'm apologizing, I doubt you're listening, Mark, but I'm forgetting the outlet that Mark works for, but he covers the Reds. He had a nice piece on, he might be MLB.com actually, but Mark had a nice piece on Cozart's resurgence. It is MLB.com, by the way. So he had a nice piece. You should go and read it. He talked about what Cozart's doing differently and his selectivity. And Cozart's one of those guys who he's always been, you know, a surprising source of like a little bit of power. And it's similar to Gonzalez, except he's in the lineup. You know, he's walking more and he's striking out less, and his selectivity has been better. He's making smarter choices at what he's swinging at, and you know that makes a difference. You know, as I always say, I don't want to oversell someone like Cozart, but you know, if that average, you know, pops up to 280, 290, he's got some pop and he's kind of a sneaky value. The other guy I want to, you know, mention just a little bit is, you know, Luis Perdomo. Perdomo is a pitcher. He's kind of shown flashes. I like him as a matchup guy. I don't really like him as much more than that, but that ground ball rate is really something. And it helps him. He's kind of one of those weird pitchers who he doesn't necessarily have to be in Pecto to be worth playing. I'm not sure who picked him up, but he was a $2 bid in Labor Mix. You know, in this kind of format, I like taking someone like that and streaming him, and you know, maybe seeing if you have something. You know, he's also doing that thing Tyson Ross did a few years ago, where he's throwing a lot of sliders. Which in the long term could be bad for him in terms of his arm or his health. But, you know, we know in the short term, we've seen pitchers really kind of sore up by doing that. And the jury's still out on him, but I would like to kind of see how that develops.
Brett, who's a name for you on this list? Because I have one guy, but I doubt you're going to pick him. Go ahead.
Well, I want to talk about the catching situation for a second, because I found myself in this position in both Labor and Tout, and ended up with different players. But there are a lot of catchers that have gone on the DL in the last week. Guys who people are counting on in both one and two catcher leagues. So you know, looking at Labor and Tout, the four guys that jumped out to me as sort of the top group were Sandy Leon, Yan Gomes, and both Rockies catchers. So Dustin Garneau and Ryan Hannigan. I put in my top bid for Leon in both Labor and Tout, and I didn't get him in either of them. I ended up with Gomes in Tout and Garneau in Labor. Mike kind of hinted at this in the column, but Gomes is more attractive in an OBP league than in an average league. So my order was slightly reversed, but you know, he's not very good, but he's been playing a little bit and he's been getting on base enough. The Rockies thing is an interesting situation to watch, because you know they're in the middle of a homestand. They've got 8 games at home this week, including the 2 against the Cubs today. Then they go on a road trip, but as part of their road trip, they go to Cincinnati and Philadelphia. So it's not a bad time to pick up someone fringy on the Rockies, At this point, I don't know whether which of Garneau or Hannigan are going to end up running with that job. I would not be surprised if Hannigan gets 60-65% of the playing time, almost the rest of the year, especially if they hang in there in the division for a while. There's just a lot of stuff out there. There are some leagues where Tyler Flowers is still available. I like him a good amount also, as sort of a couple week replacement.
I think Flowers is like the best or second best hitter by TAV, or at least he was heading into the week, which is, that won't keep up, but he is a sneaky good hitting option.
Yeah. And he was gone in both of those leagues, but I did get him in the new league, which is nice, because I have Russell Martin and Travis Darnot in that league, so that's not a fun couple of days. But just the catchers I wanted to touch on, just because I feel like a lot of listeners are probably feeling the pain of having an injured catcher.
Yeah, I've been writing the free agent watch this year, and I can guarantee you a guy who I'm going to be writing about is Joe Biagini this week. I've been doing the Charlie Morton, Alex Wood, Trevor Cahill, those types of guys for a few weeks now, and the Jesse Chavez train. Brett, you got me on board with him. But Biagini, he made his first career start as a major leaguer on Sunday, went only four innings, but two hits, one run, four strikeouts, no walks. And I think he can morph into this guy. I mean, if you look at the Blue Jays right now, they're so banged up with their rotation. They're already down two starters. Stroman came back, which is good for them. But Biagini, I think he could be a guy who goes four or five innings every 5 days and pitches like that. And that has some value. It's almost like a Devenski role, but as a starter. Maybe a little bit like Alex Wood, like what he's doing right now. So I could see that for him. Mike, let's move on to the NL side of things. This is where
I want to talk about what's going on in Tout Wars for me, or the Fab in general.
You know, it's been a few weeks, so let's do that. Let's talk about your team for a minute. What's going on? How you feeling?
Well, the Starling Marte, I almost said injury. The suspension has really hampered my steals, although having, you know, Manuel Margot not really running has kind of hurt that as well. It's just one of those weird things, you know. So I had a strategy where I put a lot of my money into offense, and the offense is not really underperforming. Well, it's underperforming in steals and on base. It's okay everywhere else, and the pitching is really overperforming. It's really funny. Some of that is Trevor Cahill, you know, and picking him up and having him in. Some of that's Brandon McCarthy, who was doing well before he got hurt.
Can we talk about Trevor Cahill for a minute?
Sure. I know you and I were both tweeting about him the other night, and you saw his last couple starts. What's your take on him? Is this sustainable, or is he pitching over his head, or a little bit of both?
There's a little bit of both, because I don't think the command comes and goes for him, and I don't know how much of it is, you know, he gets deeper into a start and he struggles to throw strikes, or just that there's so much movement with his pitches that it's just inherently difficult to throw strikes when you're throwing what he offers. The two-seam fastball he's got going on right now, I mean, he threw a couple to the Rangers on Monday night that Ryan Bloomfield and I, we were posting GIFs, or is it GIF? I don't remember what it is, but of the two-seam that he was throwing in on left-handed batters and really painting that inside corner, and, you know, to guys like Odor and Gallo, and I've been really impressed by that. And you look at Cahill, he's striking out over 11 per 9. He's walking over 4 batters per 9, which isn't great, but by DRA, he has a 2.05 DRA in 6 starts, so, and a 78 CFIP, where the league average is 100, right? So you're talking about...
Yeah.
CFIP is predictive, so that inspires a little bit of confidence in me. If you look at the swinging strike rate on or whiffs per swing on his curveball, I mean, I think his swinging strike rate is around 20% right now, as last I checked. So
yeah,
he's been good, man, and he's got a great park.
You know, my thing about Cahill, you know, I've watched a couple starts now, and you know, just because I have him in Tout, and I was, you know, I kept him on reserve. To remind our listeners, the strategy there has been a very conservative profile in terms of who I start and when I start them. But Cahill, you know, watching those starts, he's not really throwing hard. What he's doing is he's altering it. It's a combination of the pitches, and, you know, you mentioned the two-seamer, the curve has looked great. And it's a sequencing, you know, he's yeah, sequencing in a way that he did that one big year he had with the A's, where nothing dominant. And yes, the command, more the control at times has eluded him, but pitchers are not making any hard contact. You know, we kind of know the deal with pitchers like Cahill. It's a very fine line. And if he loses that touch and loses that feel, he could be very hittable. But he is someone right now, you have to play him, I'd really say, just about anywhere, even in a 12-team mixed. He's a home start for me in a 12-team mixed. I don't want to say automatically. It depends on
right,
the matchup. But you have to at least have him on your bench or as a streaming option there.
He's venturing into auto start category in deeper mixed leagues. I think against...
deeper mixed, yeah.
Yeah, at this point. I'm still a little bit concerned because in the back of my mind, you know, there's a part of me that's like, this could go south at any point because he's Trevor Cahill, but...
Yeah.
You kind of have to ride it as long as it goes here. So, yeah, I'd agree with that. So, did you pick up anyone this week in Fab? Or
I picked up a couple of guys. So, I tried to bid on Tommy Pham, but I was outbid. So I wound up with, and I'm going to mispronounce his first name, so I'm not going to bother. I picked up Sierra on the Cardinals. And wasn't my first choice, but I was just looking for some short term at bats and hopefully some speed. And, you know, oddly enough, he's actually hit a little bit so far this week. Although tonight I see he's 0-for-1, although he does have a walk in its tout, which is an OBP league. Again, I'm just looking for at bats there. We were talking about this a bit before. I'm just a little bit short on at bats because of injuries. I've got Travis d'Arnaud. The other pickup I made was Kevin Plawecki, who I got for $8. Again, this is out of 1,000, so it's a very nominal bid. I just need the bodies. Ryan Braun was day to day, and I lost a lot of him this past week. Jason Hayward went on the DL after the deadline, so I couldn't replace him. So, you know, it's in only leagues you need at bats, you need volume. And these are the kind of injuries that just really hurt.
Brett, tell us a little bit about Mags Sierra.
He shouldn't be in the majors.
What? What's going on with the Cardinals? Because this is just craziness to me.
He was literally the last healthy outfielder on their 40-man roster. So until Fowler and Piscotty are playing every day, he needs to be on the team. You know, this was the same thing the Twins did with Jorge Polanco like 4 years ago, where they called him up. They had like a weird emergency need, and they called him up from A-ball I think for like a week or two, and then sent him back down. But you know, I think the one thing for Sierra, what he can do, you know, he's not going to take advantage of this to the point where he's going to, you know, keep any sort of job for the rest of the year. That's, you know, that's not realistic. But what he could do is he could convince the Cardinals that he's ready for Double A, if he kind of holds his own in the majors. And, you know, that's something that could potentially speed up his timeline a little bit if you're owning him in a keeper in Dynasty League. But you know, his ceiling is not huge. He's got some speed. He's, you know, might be able to hit for a little bit average. There's not a ton of fantasy greatness in the profile. But you know, in real life, he's, you know, he's a pretty good center fielder. He's, you know, he's a nice prospect.
To his greatest attribute is that he's not Matt Adams. That's pretty much it, right?
Well, I mean, that's all of our greatest attributes, isn't it?
God,
I do not like Matt Adams. I have very few hot takes, and that's maybe one of them. Just not a fan. I don't get it. On that note, is there anyone else on the NL side that you guys want to discuss? Sorry, Matt Adams.
Who was we kind of skipped over a little bit, so. You know, it's kind of funny. Gregor Blanco was the big buy this week, and I actually, Andy Behrens, I had another joke about this in the column. You know, Andy Behrens did have an answer to that, and his answer was basically, you know, that's an NL only, and I was just kind of rolling the dice on somebody. So there's no inside information here. You know, Andy, who, you know, I like, he's a good guy. You know, we see him every year at Tout Wars. He's very affable. He did this last year with James Loney, where he bid a ton of money on him right before Loney was right after he's picked up by the Mets. So, you know, you never know, but this is probably just one of those bids that was too much. And then a couple pitchers picked up, Matt Garza at 72 and Jacob Turner at 72. Turner, who he's picked up, looked like he was going to be starting, but now it appears the Nationals are going to go with AJ Cole instead of Turner later this week. And that's kind of a bummer. I mean, this is the land of NL only. There just isn't much there. There wasn't even any speculating like there was last week on, you know, a couple of, I think it was Rhys Hoskins and Ian Happ, you know, a couple of those stash guys. We didn't even see that.
How was Garza not owned before this week in Tout NL?
He was hurt. Nobody picked him up on the reserves and nobody stashed him. You know, it's funny you say that, because honestly, with the starters, I think I had Feldman, McCarthy, and Cahill. Garza was the next guy on my list, so he probably was the next guy on the list for a lot of people.
Yeah, probably.
Should be owned in NL, though, that's for sure.
Yeah, I mean, the other thing about Garza, though, he's doing well this year, but he was bad like in 2015 and 2016. So, you know, I think he should have been picked up by now, but I get why no one even took a stab on him on reserve.
Anybody else here for NL, or that's it?
I don't know. I talked about him before, but a dollar for Ryan Hannigan in the two catcher NL only league seems like a really nice buy. I don't know who bought him, but
that was Phil Hertz, and I'm kind of not regretting exactly, but I'm wondering if I should have taken Hannigan over Plawecki.
Yeah. I mean, Plawecki at least play until Darno comes back a little bit.
Well, that's what it comes down to. And in my case, I really just need a replacement and not a long-term solution. I think Darno will be back in a couple weeks. So that's the song of Travis Darno. I think
that is the kiss of death right there.
Yeah.
Wow. On that note, let's talk about the AL. Is there anyone worth discussing? Nick Martinez? Gross. No. I've talked about Brad Peacock a little bit, but he's kind of fallen off. Jorge Bonifacio for a dollar. Like, what were you waiting for? He should have been picked up like 2 weeks ago. I don't understand that.
Yeah. I'm surprised by that. You know, in my case, I've got like five outfielders, a DH, and even Tyler Collins on my bench who I can't use. So I just had no place to put Bonifacio, but I was surprised by that as well. It's there's really nobody here. The AL the last, and I didn't pick up anybody. The AL the last 2 weeks has been bereft of any kind of decent moves whatsoever. And my status in labor AL is the pitching has overperformed, the hitting has underperformed, and I'm in third place right now. Although I think I'm closer, or yeah, I'm as close to last as I am to first. So I'm at the top of a big clump of teams. And essentially, I need the hitters to hit. If they hit, I could have a fun year in this league. If they continue to be subpar, I'm probably going to finish sixth.
Anybody else?
I got nothing.
Okay.
No, good. There's no one else.
Cool. All right, let's do the mailbag segment right here, real quick before we go to break. We got a couple of interesting questions, and I'll start off with we got a dynasty one, Brett. So I'll go to you first. It's from Mark Vogel. He wants to know, trade Kyle Schwarber for Aroldis Chapman.
No.
Here's the thing. Okay, a lot of people have been freaking out about Kyle Schwarber. Like, calm the hell down. He's fine. Like, that one bugs me. Like, the Kyle Schwarber hate that's going on, it really bugs me.
I feel like people are forgetting that he missed all of last season.
Yeah, like, I don't understand.
I mean, I know he showed up and was really good in the play, in the World Series when he came back for a couple games, but you know, he did miss the whole year. He's, you know, this isn't that weird for him to come out and struggle, but I haven't lost faith in Schwarber long term at all.
His on base skills are still intact. He's hitting for power when he is making contact. Like, I understand the batting average sucks, but he's fine. I don't see anything glaring that really freaks me out. He's the same guy. He's gonna be fine, people. All right, Mike, this is from Max Balsam Margolis. Is Dylan Bundy gonna start striking guys out? I assume you guys can predict the future. Well done, Max.
I doubt it, just because the velocity's down, although some of that, interestingly enough, is by choice. His pitch selection's different. He's deliberately, apparently, not trying not to throw as hard. And some of this is a strategy to avoid injury, get him to go a little bit deeper into games. It's worked. He should regress a little bit. You know, when we saw a little bit of that in his last outing against the White Sox, he's not going to put up a 2.17, obviously. But I could see him putting up like a 3.5, 3.6. Just not going to be a strikeout guy if this is the pitch profile that he continues to use.
Brett, this question is from D. Eck, whose bio says, just a craft beer loving dad that occasionally wears skinny jeans. Okay, he wants to know, do you think Gazelman will get it together? Asking as a Mets fan / fantasy owner.
Yeah, I think he's going to improve as the season goes on. I think it's certainly too early to give up on him. You know, the Mets are the nice thing about Gazelman, if you own him, is that yes, he has not been great, but The Mets are in such dire straits in their rotation that he's not going anywhere. You don't have to worry about him getting getting replaced. You don't have to worry about any of that. So, you know, I think you want to try to see a little bit better of a pitch mix from him. But you know, and the velocity is kind of all over the place. I do think he will settle down. I think he'll be a solid fourth starter in mixed leagues. It just depends how far the Mets are willing to push him.
Yeah, for those of you who missed the show last week, I talked with Jarrett Seidler about Gesellman and some other Mets topics. So he's confident that Gesellman's going to be okay. So you should check that out if you missed last week's show. This is from friend of the show, Mike, Punch Out Pappy. He's interested in hearing your takes on the following third baseman, Travis Shaw, Joey Gallo, and Eugenio Suarez. Which one do you like the most out of that group, I guess, would be the question. For me, it's Gallo, but...
Well, for long-term, it's Gallo. And you know, some of that question, if you're talking about an OBP or a points league, points have strikeouts. I mean, it's an OBP league, it's Gallo. There's no doubt about it. The average, though, hurts him in a roto format and hurts him quite a bit. That's a tough call. They all three of them are decent and have a different skill set. I'd probably lean Travis Shaw. I really believe in him. And I think, Brett, you were one of the people who was kind of high on Shaw coming into the year. And I have to say you were right about him. I don't know. All three of them have their merits. I lean Shaw here, but they're all pretty good.
If we're going to give Brett credit for being right about anyone, it should be Ryan Zimmerman.
True.
I mean,
I don't think Brett predicted this.
And let you guys give me credit for things, but... You know, that probably doesn't make for make for such interesting listening. I would take Shaw of that group. Mike's absolutely right. If it's OBP, it's Gallo. But the thing that I worry about with Gallo is that, you know, Beltre is going to come back soon. He's probably going to be back in the next 3 weeks or so, and they will move Gallo to the outfield, I assume. But if he has sort of a rough patch, I think he could lose playing time pretty quickly since they just have more options at that point.
That's a great point. First of all, I think, are the Rangers going to be willing to accept pretty lackluster defense in left field? I mean, Joey Gallo is a great athlete, but he's not a great left fielder. And are they willing to let him strike out 250 times? I think you really have to think long and hard about that if you're the Rangers and you're willing to commit to him as an everyday player. I think that's a lot there. Brett, yeah, I was totally wrong on Ryan Zimmerman. I believe I said, quote, I think he's cooked, and turns out he's not. He's fine. Aaron Pinkston.
I do think you did say that.
Yeah,
I didn't like Zimmerman either, though.
At the end of last year, he was just, he did not look good, and part of it was probably health more than anything else. So we've treaded that ground this year. Aaron Pinkston, Brett, he wants to know if Eddie Butler is called up to the fifth spot in the Cubs rotation, and boy, should he be, because Brett Anderson is absolute garbage, should he be considered in deep leagues?
Yes. Anyone who the Cubs throw out there should be considered in deep leagues just because of the combination of their defense and their offense, or at least their offensive potential. If Butler gets called up and is in that rotation, I think he's worth, I think he's worth picking up in, you know, 15, 16 team mixed leagues. I wouldn't in anything shallower than that, you know, and not really because I think Eddie Butler is going to be a great starter, but, you know, I think, you know, you have to be pretty bad to not return some value as a Cub starter, given the way that team is constructed. And that just really shows you how bad Brett Anderson needed to be in order to be, in order to do what he's done so far this year.
It's a pretty low bar. Last one, Mike. It comes from Mark B. He wants to know, what are we attributing Carlos Gonzalez's slow start to? And what about Chris Davis?
Which Chris Davis? The Orioles
Oh,
Chris Davis?
damn it. Chris Davis with a C.
Yeah, it's the Orioles Chris Davis. Well, I know for Cargo, I've looked at him a little bit more. So there's some, I don't want to say disturbing batted ball trends, but there's some batted ball trends there where he's not making as much quality contact and not getting nearly as much exit velocity as you'd expect. The thing I'd say about Cargo is we saw this 2 years ago with him. He had an awful start with the Rockies, and he had a sub-600 OPS, and this was through June 1st. And then he went on a complete tear. I'm not even ascribing to the slow start, fast start mentality. I'm more ascribing the idea that if he's healthy, and this could be a bit of an if, but assuming he's healthy, Cargo will hit. He'll eventually come out of this. He's not at an age where I'm concerned that he's going to fall off the map completely. He should be fine. Davis is somebody who kind of I haven't looked at as much as Cargo, but my impression, just a streaky hitter, just one of those hitters who goes through these slumps where he's striking out, he's not making quality contact. Davis should be fine, but you know, unlike Cargo, we know the deal with Davis. The average is going to be bad, and he'll hit a lot of home runs. He's sort of like the idea of Joey Gallo when, you know, Joey Gallo is eventually an established major leaguer. You'd expect some streaks that are good and bad. You'd expect a lot of home runs, and you'd expect a subpar average or worse.
All right, so we're going to take a quick break, and then we're going to come back, and we're going to do a quick segment on Mike's in-season fantasy evaluations, and then we'll wrap up the show. So we'll be right back here on Flags Fly Forever. And we're back here on Flags Fly Forever. I hope you used that break to pull up Mike Gianella's in-season fantasy evaluations piece. They came out about a week ago now, Mike. They run through April 30th. So if you're not familiar with valuations, Mike, what are the basics that people need to know about how to properly use these valuations?
Well, for the first month, honestly, they're mostly for entertainment purposes. What I do, unlike what some sites do, is I look at what players are on pace to earn. So Mike Trout, for example, as great as Mike Trout is on pace to earn $57, or he was in AL only. And, you know, as great as Mike Trout is, it's very unlikely that he'd do that just because it takes so much in the way of stats. Like, he would have to have continued at his April pace, you know, of 7 home runs, 5 steals, and a .364 batting average. So with these early valuations, it's just something to look at. Where it's useful to me is with players in the middle, where you might be wondering, okay, well, how good has this guy really been? And like, there's some reality checks here. Like, as an example, you know, Xander Bogaerts is somebody everybody has kind of maligned and said he's not hitting home runs. You know, he's on pace in an AL only to earn $19, and that's certainly not what you paid for with him. But assuming a bounce back with Bogaerts, he's somebody who you shouldn't look at as a bust right now, but as someone who's somewhat underperforming and should bounce up to at least be, you know, perhaps a slight overpay as opposed to a big one.
Brett, we're going to start with the American League hitters. And I think just at a glance, the thing I look at first on these valuations are the fact that there's not a lot of speed here. Look at stolen base totals. There's just not a lot of guys stealing bases. I think the name that stands out to me the most is probably Lorenzo Cain, who had 6 steals in April. He hasn't hit for a lot of power, only hitting .272. But if Lorenzo Cain's healthy and he gets back to running a lot, that's a good thing for his fantasy value.
Yeah, it is. I mean, the guy, if you're gonna go to that group, I mean, the guy that jumps out to me is Jacoby Ellsbury. You know, Ellsbury is Cain, at least that fantasy owners, at least some fantasy owners, still have a positive taste of Lorenzo Cain in their mouth. You know, Jacoby Ellsbury has ruined just about a fantasy season for everybody. So, you know, he's been pretty solid and running in a day where, you know, people just aren't running very much anymore. So, you know, he's on pace to earn $33 in here. I mean, that's, I don't think that's going to happen, but I think, you know, I think Ellsbury is showing that we're probably a little low on him going into the year if he's going to run at this pace.
Mike, let's talk about Andrew Benintendi for a minute, because he's having a fantastic season. He's now batting cleanup for the Red Sox. I think they've kind of decided that Mookie Betts needs to lead off, that that's his ideal role, and they've really gotten the offense going since they've moved him there, Pedroia into the two spot, with Xander hitting third. So if Benintendi's batting cleanup, he's going to hit for average. He's hit for, I think, a little more power than we expected, right?
Yeah, a little bit. You know, he's a home run every 30 at bats in April, and that's not great, but you know, I was expecting like 13, 15 home runs. He's ahead of that pace.
Right. So where do you envision him finishing among American League hitters? Because he's a top 15 hitter right now at the end of April. Do you think he finishes in that range? Or because I think
a little
the
lower
stats will be there.
Yeah, I see him top 20, top 25, just because, again, you know, is the power for him isn't something where it's like I don't expect him to go on a big tear. But it's more that he can hit a home run and has that ability to clear the fence. Same thing with the steals. You know, he had two steals in April. I don't expect him to, you know, steal 30, but you know, if he steals 15, that wouldn't surprise me. So he'll be one of those all around players who, because of the average and because of the run production you mentioned, is going to be a sneaky earner. So I'm going to say top 20. That feels like a safe expectation to me. You know, another thing to keep in mind if you're following along at home with these valuations. These earnings will flatten out. So Benintendi's 13th overall and is on pace for $35. There's a really good chance that the top 10 hitters will be the only $30 earners, or maybe the top 12. It's just how this tends to level off as the season goes along.
All right, let's move to American League pitchers, because we have to move faster if we're going to go through everybody. Brett, this list is pretty rough. You've waxed poetically about Luis Severino a lot this season, so I won't let you go there first. But do you want to talk about Carlos Carrasco at all, or no?
I mean, this is kind of what everyone was hoping Carrasco would be, but you know, he's done this for stretches before, so I don't think anyone's quite ready to jump and say that he's, you know, he's now a you know, bona fide fantasy ace. You know, hopefully he's really fun to watch when he's like this, so hopefully he does keep it up. But I'm still a little skeptical that that the people who own him are now thinking that he's turned the corner into being one of those, you know, elite starters, and I just don't think that's the case.
I have a good hypothetical for you. Is James Shields the best American League only pitcher target that you can go out and acquire right now for cheap because he's on the DL? I mean, he's pitched well so far.
He has pitched pretty well. I mean, if you're going to talk about guys who are on the DL who you can probably acquire in an AL only league, I think Ian Kennedy probably has to be on that list.
Yeah.
You know, he's been pretty good. He's been, I guess, the good version of Kennedy, at least late career Kennedy. I don't think he's expected to miss more than, right? He's not expected to miss more than a couple weeks, right?
Yeah, he'll be back soon, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mike, you have just been appointed the new FBI director. Your first choice is you have to pick between Andrew Triggs or Jason Vargas rest of season. Who are you going with?
I like them both, but I think I'd lean Vargas, just because the velocity has ticked up after the surgery. You know, we know both of them are not going to put up, you know, ERAs under two. But Vargas is striking out over, you know, batter per nine. He's showing excellent commands. I do like the defense behind him, although if the Royals do fire sale, there is that danger that he'll lose some of that. So between the two of them, I'd go Vargas, you know, with the caveat that both of them are not going to do this the rest of the way.
All right, real quickly for each of you, which is the American League pitcher that you're the most surprised at, either positive or negative, so far? You don't have to give me an explanation, just who is surprising to you. Brett.
Most surprising.
It can be bad.
I want to say, from a valuation standpoint, I might say Anthony Swarzak, just because he's one of these fun guys that pops up on this list when you do it this early. He's on pace for a $30 season.
April lists are great, aren't they?
April lists are awesome. The guy, you know what, Derek Holland is really surprising to me. I this seems crazy, but I just don't see this continuing. I he should not be pitching this well.
No, he's not good. Mike, who you got?
Jesse Hahn, you know, just one of those guys who, you know, we know that he could slip in this out of the other, but if you had told me he'd be where he is right now, you know, or after April, I'd be like, yeah, that does not compute.
All right, NL hitters. Ryan Zimmerman leads the way. He's on pace to earn $58 at the end of April, which is great. Like, if you think about how, like, Eric Thames is hotter than the surface of the sun, and he's, like, the fourth best hitter in the NL. It's wild. I think the guy who stands out to me is, I would have said Justin Turner, but Chris Owings, I think, has to be the name here. 7 steals, 4 home runs at the end of April, hitting like over 300. Chris Owings.
Daniel Murphy is just the quietest. You know, he's on pace to earn 37 through April. He was 8th overall. You know, because of Zim and Harper. You know, just the, and no steals. You know, just the quietest, you know, top 10 hitter in the NL that you might ever see. You know, a lot of these other guys I've seen talked about, but Murphy, we've almost just accepted from him now that, you know, this is the new reality, and everyone's like, oh yeah, Daniel Murphy's hitting again. Yawn.
Mike, Cesar Hernandez, what do you make of him? Because I know you're our local Philly expert. What's going on with him?
Well, he's turned into a legitimate player. He's a good player. You know, every once in a while he has a gaffe on the base pass or on the field. Still, you know, I think there was a mental mistake he made in the field that I don't remember the exact play, but people were groaning about it here. But he's a legitimate player. I don't necessarily see that power holding to that level, but everything else, you know, if he hits 290 with some solid numbers across the board, don't be surprised by that.
Brett, on a scale of 1 to Matt Harvey, how concerned are you about Gregory Polanco?
I'm not concerned.
Really?
I think he'll be fine.
Yep. Okay. All right. It is early.
It is early. He's still running, I think, so there's a little bit of a floor to his value. I'm not concerned at this point.
I'm a little bit, but I can't put my finger on why. I haven't watched him closely enough yet to really have a reason, so that's fair. All right, any other hitters you guys want to touch on here? I don't think there's Mark Reynolds. I mean, what the hell? That's so...
I'm enjoying him in town.
Yeah, it's frustrating.
As you should be, yeah.
Yeah.
All right.
Nothing else that jumps out.
All right, on the pitching side, your ERA leader is Mike Leake, as everybody predicted. I talked with Ryan last week on the show about Ivan Nova, but, I mean, I loved Nova coming into the year, and you guys tried to talk me off the ledge with him a little bit, but he's been really fantastic. I don't quite know. I brought up last week that there might be like a tipping point with him where he's throwing too many strikes and eventually it's like a time bomb. Do you guys have that concern with Nova as well?
This feels like that Phil Hughes stretch.
Oh, yes.
When he was actually decent, and then became Phil Hughes again. So I'm into playing Nova right now, before that happens. But once that does start to happen, I don't think it's going to be particularly pretty.
I'm with Brett, and you know, a guy was looking at that in this list, and he had a good outing today, and you know, people were praising him. Nova's one of those guys. Antonio Senzatella is another one of those pitchers. Pitchers who have good ERAs and that poor strikeout inning rate, you know, they might be doing something right. In Nova's case, you know, he's not walking anybody. But Brett's absolutely right. At some point, the bottom just falls out for pitchers like this. Even if Nova, you know, puts up a 3.5 the rest of the way, which is certainly good, and he could do it in that park, I know it's a gambler's fallacy, but it's that idea that he's going to have an outing or two outings where, you know, he's not quite hitting his spots. And yeah, it's that Phil Hughes thing. He's just going to be very hittable.
Brett, rest of season, Lance Lynn or Zach Greinke?
Zach Greinke.
Okay. Did you have to think about it at all or no?
No. Do you want to know a really fun fact? If you want to play a game, and I'm sad that I have to reintroduce this segment, but can either of you tell me who the one walk Ivan Nova issued this year was to?
I can't.
It was a pitcher, wasn't guessing. It?
Yeah, I was going to guess a pitcher.
Was it George?
Oh God!
I'm trying to remember. Oh, I wish I could. I want to say it was like Tom Kohler or someone like that.
Nope, not Tom Kohler. It was Jordan Montgomery.
Oh, I remember that, this now. Yeah.
So it was a pitcher.
It was. That is the one batter that Ivan Nova has walked this year.
He has, in his 16 starts with the Pirates, right? He has more complete games than walks or something like that. It's absurd. I don't quite understand. All right.
Yeah.
Mike, let me give you another one here, and we'll end on this note. Rest of season, Alex Wood, or I gotta find another game that's good. There's no one I'm finding. No, I can't find anyone good. Alex Wood or Matt Harvey?
Well, I would say Alex Wood at this point, just because I don't know what we're going to get out of Matt Harvey.
Well, that's fair. Maybe that wasn't
I'd take
one.
Matt Harvey.
I know you. I knew you'd say that, Brett.
I'm trying to find a good name. Well, oh, I got one.
Go ahead.
Sorry. I've had like 3 cups of coffee tonight. Alex Wood or Julio Teheran? NL only.
I'd still go with Teheran.
What? Okay. I like Alex Wood a lot.
I do too.
Am I crazy, Brett?
I've seen this where
no, Alex but how much is he going to pitch?
Right.
I mean, McCarthy's going to be in the rotation, and Urias is going to be in the rotation.
Are we sure that McCarthy's going to be in the rotation?
If he's healthy, he's going to be in the rotation. He's been really good. He's been really good, and they won't move him to the bullpen because it'll just mess with him. You know, Alex Wood has the has committed the sin of being good in the bullpen. So, you know, he is going to be the first guy to leave the rotation and go back to the pen when they feel like they have 5 guys that they like and that are healthy. I don't trust him to stay in the rotation, not necessarily of his own doing, but nonetheless.
Yeah, they have it's a good problem to have. Their situation. They're like manufacturing reasons to put guys on the DL. I mean, it's kind of crazy. All right. Any final thoughts, guys, on this list or any list?
This will all change. But if we look at this at the end of May, this will all be very different. And part of the reason I roll this out, and this has been my theme this month, is that, you know, there certainly are trends to look at. At an April, but we really overemphasize the month, and we say small sample size the first week or two, and then after 4 weeks, there's almost an overconfidence in what we've seen.
Yeah, I don't have anything else to add here. I do have one thing I want to throw out there, just because I'm thinking about it right now, and it's nothing to do with the valuations, but I really love what Brian Price is doing with the Reds bullpen. Did you see what he did again tonight?
They brought Lorenzen in, didn't they? Wicked early.
Yeah, they let Adelman throw 5 innings. They threw Lorenzen for 2 innings in the 6th and 7th, and now they're throwing Iglesias in the 8th and 9th. They've been doing this a good amount, where they've been letting Iglesias go in for these 2 inning saves, and
yeah,
it's really awesome.
Well,
I like
Ben,
it.
Ben Lindbergh, you know, he talked about the kind of the advent of the super reliever in an article at The Ringer, like right before this, right after the season started. And a couple teams have, you know, a couple relievers they identified haven't done it yet, but the Reds are doing it with Lorenzo Iglesias. The Astros are doing it with Devinsky. And yeah, I'm thinking you're going to start to see this more and more from teams once they identify these guys. This is the wave of the future. You know, a lot of people are talking about how the future is going to be like all these home runs and shifting and this, that, and the other. I really see the future. Someday we're going to look at the 200 inning pitcher as either a dinosaur or an extreme rarity, just based on the way pitchers are being used.
Oh, real quickly, before we go, I mean, did either of you guys see the piece from Ben Lindbergh today about the Major League Baseball releasing the results of their sort of internal data on the baseballs and them not being juiced,
apparently? I did not.
Okay.
I haven't gotten a chance to read yet, but I'm planning to.
Yeah, send me the link, or I follow Ben on Twitter. I'll just find it. Ben, yeah. Ben's not like me and doesn't tweet a bunch of nonsense, so I can get to it pretty quickly.
No, Ben's, I mean, we all like Ben, so I thought it was a really fascinating read, so maybe we'll discuss it on next week's show. How about that? All right, we're going to take a break and come back and wrap up the show. And we're back. Thank you for listening to episode 132 of Flags Fly Forever. This has been a Baseball Prospectus Fantasy Podcast. Don't forget to subscribe today with a one-year premium membership to read all of us on baseballprospectus.com. Mike has his expert fab. I have the Free Agent Watch that comes out on Fridays. They're fantastic. You should go read it right now. Sign up for super premium membership. You get access to the Bat Signal. It's our personalized fantasy answering service. BP Ballpark events are back. The first one is on June 17th at Camden Yards. It's Oriole Park at Camden Yards. I didn't know that was the actual name. All I know is that it's in Baltimore. It's $52 for a ticket. You can purchase it at baseballprospectus.com. It's a great deal. There's going to be a bunch of guests. What else do you get, Brett? You get lots of cool stuff.
You do. You get a pregame panel discussion with Orioles general manager Dan Duquette, and with members of the Baseball Prospectus family.
See, I would go just to ask Dan Duquette about running the Expos in like the 90s. Like that, he has to have some great stories about that. That seems like a lot of fun. So you can get your tickets to BP. That's on June 17th, once again, at Camden Yards. So go check that out right now. You can follow us on Twitter. Brett is at Brett Sayer BP. Mike is at Mike Gianella, and I'm at George Bissell. Subscribe, rate, and review us on iTunes. We're going to be back next week with a new episode. I want to thank everybody for listening. Until our next show, so long, everybody.